Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Foundations in Faith. Join Monsignor Frank Lane as he offers insights into the readings heard at Mass. And now, Foundations in Faith with Monsignor Frank Lane.
This is Father Frank Lane, and we're continuing our program, Foundations in Faith. Today, we're going to look at the Gospel according to St. Matthew, chapter 25, verses 14 to 30. And it's the story, the famous story in the Gospels of the talents. So let's listen to it for just a minute and then go back and kind of see exactly what the Lord is talking about. Jesus spoke this parable to his disciples, and the kingdom of heaven is like a man on his way abroad who summoned his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to a third 1, each in proportion to his ability. Then he set out. The man who had received the 5 talents promptly went and traded with them and made 5 more. The man who had received 2 made 2 more in the same way. But the man who had received 1 went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now a long time after, the master of those servants came back and went through his accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 more. Sir, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents, and here are 5 more that I have made. And so this story then continues along those lines, and we'll go back and look at the consequences when the master does return. But we have had a series of Gospels from St. Matthew, which fall into the category of the eschatological Gospels, and that means the Gospels that have... deal with the final things, with the last things and the final times and the second coming of the Lord, and the reaffirmation of the second coming of the Lord as something absolutely and guaranteed and absolutely promised and absolutely to be expected and to be anticipated as part and parcel of the whole Christian faith. So here we have not before they were invited to the great wedding feast of the Lamb. Now they're not invited to the great wedding feast of the Lamb. Now they're simply talking about the entrance into the kingdom. And we have to understand also that in the gospel stories, whenever money is drawn into it as kind of a sign of someone's responsibility or someone's accountability, or it's never really the gold or the silver that the Lord is talking about. He's trying to talk about the gift of faith, actually. And he's using images of gold and silver and shekels and drachmas and all of that to help people to get some kind of a concrete sense. Faith is a very ethereal word. It's a word that in Hebrews it says it's the confidence in things hoped for and the assurance of things not yet seen, that it is a trust of sorts, and it is a trust that helps us to accept and to believe what the Lord has said to us and what the Lord has promised. Well, Jesus is not talking about he is talking about an ethereal entity, therefore. He is talking about faith. But in order to make it existential, in order to concretize it, it has to do then with, in this case, it has to do with he's putting it in monetary terms in order that we might then be able maybe to grasp some of what he's talking about. So the money that he gives the men, the 5, the 2, and the 1. This has to do actually with the person's capacity to believe. You know that this is something that we struggle with and something that's very difficult for us, because we know that when we talk in faith terms, in terms of subjectivity, we run the real risk of making everything subjective, which is exactly what's happening now in our modern age, which was what we call modernism, the radical turn toward the subject. And so we got into this reaction to that at the beginning of the 20th century, that we wanted to see nothing within the church as a subjective phenomenon, everything objective. And we kind of bought the proposition that faith, therefore, is an intellectual assent to propositional doctrine. And while that is certainly an element of faith, that is not the definition of faith. Faith is the reception of the grace of God that enables us to believe and to respond to what we believe and to trust in the Lord. Not everybody's capacity is the same. We know, for instance, that in the modern field of psychology, we're very aware of the fact that that everything in our lives affects the inner structures of our personalities, that everything in our lives, without a miracle of grace, kind of, in a way, the subjective experience constructs the capacity to receive human love, to receive divine love, to receive truth of any kind, to receive revelation of any kind. Everyone struggles in some way, shape, or form with both the gifts they have received from their life story, but also the deprivations that we have received from our life stories. So we cannot talk about an objective reality having to do with the capacity of the human person to believe. It is conditioned. This is the thing that that Joseph Ratzinger got himself into trouble with. When he was earning his academic degrees, in Germany, if they want to be a professor, they have to get first of all a doctorate in that subject. Then once they have their doctorate, then they have to write a second dissertation called a Habilitationsschrift, and then that has to be accepted in order for them really to be able to secure any kind of university position. Ratzinger's Habilitationsschrift made this very point, that there is, in some way, shape, or form, an element of the reception of on the part of the subject in the content of revelation itself. Now, basically, what he was saying in broader theological terms is that part of revelation is not just what the Son brings to us, not the total revelation of being through the Word, but also the church's capacity to receive it and to accept it. So our statement that the truth is contained within the Catholic Church through Scripture and tradition, the tradition is the subjective element of the receptivity of revelation. It is the human acceptance and processing of it and articulation of it. All that Ratzinger did was bring this church template, this church paradigm, down into each of our individual lives. He was accused, actually, of being a modernist. The word was, it's too much like the French theology. And so he was rejected. But through the intercession of one of his professors, he rewrote it. And anybody that's interested in it, it's in a book called Theology of the History of Theology in St. Bonaventure. It's published by Franciscan Herald Press. And it's complex, but it's interesting. But the issue was, what he had to remove from that, of course, was the statement about the subjective reception of revelation being part of the whole. But here, Jesus makes it very clear that that's the case. He makes it very clear that not everyone is capable of receiving the whole thing, and that each of us receive, and this doesn't mean that we have a right to pick and choose. This doesn't mean that we can be cafeteria Catholics. Doesn't mean we say, well, I believe this, but I don't believe that. It's not what it means. But it means the depth and understanding with which we accept it is going to vary according to me. For some people, some of these things must remain simply an intellectual assent to a propositional truth. But that's the least that faith means in the life of people. For that usually is in some way has to be tainted, has to be colored by the capacity of the person to receive. And this thematic is carried out even through in the Council of Trent. It's carried out in the whole idea that we have no capacity to declare anyone damned because we have no idea what the subjective components of their interior self are. We certainly can judge and condemn actions, but we may not assign anyone to damnation. That's a privilege that belongs to God alone. And of course, God does not send people to hell. People choose hell in their lives. And we're going to see that also in this parable of the talents. So, the master went away for a long time. The Lord is going to come again, but it has been a long time. St. Peter tells us in his letter that 1,000 years is like a day to the Lord. And so when we talk about there, you know, being a long time since the Lord has said he'd come back again, it depends what perspective. From the perspective of the eternal now or from a perspective of the duration of time. Certainly our existential experience is the duration of time. And so we can say, yes, it's been close to 2,100 years now that we have waited patiently or impatiently, as the case may be, for the return of the Lord. But Jesus makes it clear in this gospel that he went away for a long time, leaving behind the faith of the people. And to see what the people are going to do with the faith that he leaves them, so that when he returns, now after a long time, the master of those servants came back and went through his accounts with them. And the man who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 more. Sir, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. Here are 5 more that I have made. So that what has he done with the gift of faith that the Lord had given him? He has not only deepened and enriched that faith, he has extended the fruits of that faith to a greater degree outside of himself. In other words, his faith has been fruitful, not only in his own life, but in his sharing of it with others, whether that's with family, friends, and community, however that is, that is something that he has made it fruitful, he has made it grow, he has made it deep. And so what the Lord has given him, he has done everything with according to his own capacity, according to his own interior disposition and ability. His master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have shown you can be faithful in small things. I will trust you with greater. Come and join in your master's happiness. In other words, come into the kingdom, for you have been a fruitful disciple. You have been a faithful disciple. You have been a vigilant and a zealous disciple. And so the second one says, you entrusted me with 2 talents, and here are 2 more that I have made. And his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have shown you can be faithful in small things. I will trust you with greater. Come and join in your master's happiness. They did not do the same thing. But each of them, according to the capacity that they had, reached the fulfillment of that capacity and did as much with the gift of faith, did as much with the revelation of the Lord as it was possible for them to do in their lives. And so then he comes to the last one. Sir, he said, I had heard you were a hard man, reaping what you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered. So I was afraid, and I went off, and I hid your talent in the ground. And here it is. It was yours, and now you have it back. So here was the one who did nothing with the gift that was given, buried it in the backyard, buried it inside of themselves, never let it impact their lives, never let it be effective in their lives, never let it transform them interiorly as a person, and never allowed them to use it effectively in the lives of others. How many times do we ourselves fall into this category where faith simply is a category of our life and it is not something which is transformative in our life, not something which consumes us in our life? How often is that? How often do we do that? How often do we shrink from witnessing to the faith? How often do we kind of try and wiggle out of things that the teaching of the church says? How often do we say, oh, well, you know, let's go along and get along? How often do we say, well, you know, after all, we get tired of believing and we get tired of praying and we get tired of all of that. And so maybe I could just kind of fulfill any obligation I have to whatever God there might be by just doing good, so that I can secularize my faith. I can compromise myself, and I can join in popular movements, and I can be kind of in this world. And let the faith be the faith. I say I believe in God. Sometimes I go to the sacraments. But as a matter of fact, it's not really a piece of my whole interior life. It can be something that we act upon outside of ourselves, but it's not part of our interior life. And Jesus then says to them, "You wicked and lazy servant, so you know that I reap where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered." We know that there is a vast non-Christian element of our world. We know, for instance, that the Lord expects and asks us to invite all into his kingdom. We know that his truth is the truth of being itself, truth of the living God. We know all of those things. And so what do we do with this? What do we do as our society itself becomes post-Christian? We certainly know in the political arena, and particularly in the electoral political phenomenon of this country, the antagonism and the contempt for Christianity is growing exponentially within the country, to where now we really do begin to experience some of the hard edge of the reign of darkness. We see unthinkable things beginning to happen. And I think we've mentioned this before, but the absolute attack on the Little Sisters of the Poor by the American government is almost beyond comprehension, unless we're very modern and we understand that Christianity must bow to the state or be persecuted. And what we're finding is that's now being implemented in the country. It puts an extra, much deeper burden now on us as believers. Who are we and where do we stand? Do we simply shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, that's just kind of the way life is now? Well, it is kind of the way life is now, but a shrug of the shoulders is not the Christian response. We don't have to take to the streets. We don't have to do any of that. But we have to move more deeply into our faith. We have to pray more profoundly. We have to receive the sacraments more faithfully and with deeper and greater intent. And we must be willing to suffer the unpopularity that comes with us being believing people. We have to understand that somehow or other, the Lord does not say, you know, it's all right. It's all right to sell me out if the going gets rough. Jesus has never said that, and he never did that himself, nor did the apostles, each of them going to their death, each of them going to their death for the sake of the faith. Hopefully in this country, we will not be put to death. But other things can happen. We might want to look at the case of Cardinal Pell in Australia, spending 400 days in prison for crimes he didn't commit. This kind of is part of modern society, and this is something that you and I are going to have to learn to deal with. So he said, well, then you should have deposited my money with the bankers. In other words, you should have at least practiced your faith. You should have at least gone through, you should have at least done the minimum to be a faithful disciple of the Lord. And then on my return, I would have recovered my capital with interest. And just by practicing the faith, a certain goodness comes into the midst of the world. So now he says, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has five. The faithful person will always increase, and the unfaithful person will always lose. For everyone who has will be given more. Every believer will be able to live more deep. Their faith will be deepened all the way through the journey. and he will have more than enough, but from the man who has not, even what he has will be taken away. If we do not live the faith dies within us, and we lose that. As for this good-for-nothing servant, throw him out into the darkness, where there will be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. And once again, we come again into that strange and controversial place where the Lord talks about some kind of unpleasant destiny for those who squander the goodness of the Lord, for those who reject the Lord, for those who do not respond in any way to his goodness and to his gifts. And I think that here again we see kind of a good understanding of the destiny of what we call the damned, and although that's very unpopular today, because that doesn't make people feel good about themselves, but the fact is, what the Lord is doing in this gospel, as far as the people's destiny goes, eternal destiny is going, He's not saying somehow or other that, you just didn't know any better. Oh, well, you didn't. There's no excuses for it. There was something real about what was going on. It wasn't just an internal disposition of the mind. He's also saying that we do not live in this world totally without responsibility to him. The idea that, you know, we'll just drift along, and after all, this whole thing, you know, well, after all, God is a good God, a kind God. God allows us our final choice. That's what he does. He allows us our final choice. We, in the course of how we live our lives, begin to construct our response and participation with the Lord. This is the thing very distinctive about Roman Catholicism. In that, in the Reformation theologies, the individual plays almost no role in the process of salvation. It is, as Luther said, through grace alone. God alone manages our salvation. In Roman Catholicism, we believe that even as minuscule as we are in compared with the infinite and the transcending God, there must be an element of consent and an element of a willingness to participate in the effects of the grace that he gives us in order for us to be saved. And the more we participate, is it clear from this gospel, the more capacity we have to participate. And we have kind of used maybe an unfortunate word for that. We've used the word merit for that. But what it really means is increasing our capacity to accept and to believe in the presence of the living God within the world and within ourselves. So that becomes for us a very, very important part of the story. Who am I? And how do I respond? To say we have no responsibility in the process of salvation, listen to the gospel. You gave me five, and now I went out and invested it, and now here's five more. So now I have 10 for you. That's what we call good works. That's what we call participation in the process of salvation. And the reward that we get for that is our expanded capacity within ourselves to be faithful disciples. The more we live the faith, the more we are able to live the faith in a deeper, more profound, and more effective way. That becomes the story now of the relationship between the human person and the grace of Jesus Christ, which calls us to salvation and which calls us into the kingdom of God. We know, for instance, very clearly that and we've said this before, that the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus redeemed humanity. In other words, they made it possible for humanity to be saved. The salvation is our participation in that gift of redemption from Jesus Christ. This is what distinguishes us among the Christian peoples. This is what distinguishes us in the whole story of the life of the church. We may not be simply passive recipients of the grace of Jesus Christ and then live our lives any way we choose. Secularizing the faith and moving away from any sense of the value and of the depth and the meaning of human life. That when, in fact, we have been given the faith and we increase our capacity by participation in the grace that is given us, we are not simply marionettes. The Lord just simply doesn't dance us on the end of strings from the high heavens. We are living beings sharing the flesh of the Son of God, and we are the ones then called into a deeper relationship, a deeper love, a deeper understanding, a deeper knowledge, a deeper desire to be close to the living God, to share His gifts with others. And in that sharing of gifts with others, increase within ourselves the capacity to be able to accept the gift of the kingdom. There's a great little essay, a short story by C.S. Lewis called The Great Divorce. And it's fascinating because it is the story of people who inside of themselves refuse to accept the challenges of the gifts of grace and prefer to hunker down in the miserable dwellings in C.S. Lewis's book of, you know, industrial England in the early part of the last century, which was anything but charming and anything but delightful, but choosing that to the great wonders and the gifts of God that God gives to us because they just did not respond and preferred what they had to what the Lord had given them. God honors that preference and He honors that choice. So at the end of time, we ask ourselves as we look forward, what have we chosen and what do we desire? Do we desire to be part of the secular malaise of the modern world? Or do we desire to be true disciples of the Lord, taking our five talents and doubling them for the sake of the kingdom of God? These are serious questions that we ask ourselves as the church emphasizes now through the choice of readings, the second coming of Christ, the end of time, the eschatological age.
Foundations in Faith is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Foundations in Faith are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Veni, Sancte.